Hello, and welcome to our program, Senior Living, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Christy Mernon. During this next half hour, I'm reading articles from the AARP Bulletin here on OWL Radio. The first one is the cover story, What the Pandemic Has Taught Us. For the past year, our country has been mired in not one deep crisis, but three: a pandemic, an economic meltdown, and one of the most fraught political transitions in our history. Interwoven in all three have been challenging issues of racial disparity and fairness. Dealing with all this has dominated much of our energy, attention, and for many Americans, even our emotions. But spring is here, and here we are, by and large, moving past the worst moments as a nation, which makes it a good time to take a deep breath and assess the changes that have occurred. While no one would be displeased if we could magically erase this whole pandemic experience, it's been the crucible of our lives for a year, and we have much to learn from it and even much to gain. AARP asked dozens of experts to go beyond the headlines and to share the deeper lessons of the past year that have had a particular impact on older Americans. More importantly, we asked them to share how we can use these learnings to make life better for us as we recover and move forward. Here is what they told us. Lesson 1. Family matters more than we realized. The indelible image of the older person living alone and having to struggle, we need to change that. You're going to see more older people home sharing within families and co-housing across communities. That's Mark Friedman, CEO of Encore.org and author of How to Live Forever, The Enduring Power of Connecting the Generations. Norman Rockwell would have needed miles of canvas to portray the American family this past year. You can imagine the titles: The Family That Zooms Together, Generations Under One Roof, Grandkids Outside My Window. Beneath the warts and complexities of all that went wrong, we rediscovered the interdependence of generations, says Friedman. Among the lessons, adult kids are okay. A Pew Research survey last summer found 52% of Americans between ages 18 and 29 were living with parents, a figure unmatched since the Great Depression. From February to July 2020, 2.6 million young adults moved back in with one or both parents. That's a lot of shared Netflix accounts. It's also a culture shift, says Karen Fingerman, director of the Texas Aging and Longevity Center at the University of Texas at Austin. After the family dinners, grandparents doing child care, and the wise economic sense, it's going to be acceptable for adult family members to co-reside, Fingerman says, at least for a while. Spouses and partners are critical to well-being. The ones who've done exceptionally well are couples in long-term relationships who felt renewed intimacy and reconnection to each other, says social psychologist Richard Slatcher, who runs the Close Relationships Laboratory at the University of Georgia. Difficult caregiving can morph into good-for-all home sharing. To get older Americans out of nursing homes and into a loved one's home, a priority that has gained urgency, will take more than just a willing child. New resources could help, like expanding Medicaid programs to pay family caregivers, or initiatives like the Program of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly, a Medicare-backed benefit currently helping 50,000 community-dwelling seniors with medical, home care, and transportation services. A positive piece this year has been the pause to reflect on how we can help people stay in their homes as they age, says Nancy Lamond, AARP's Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer. If you're taking care of a parent, grandparent, aging partner, or yourself, you see the need for government support, technology to communicate with your doctor, and paid leave for family caregivers. Family may be the best medicine. Now we know if you can't hug your 18-month-old granddaughter in person, you can read to her on FaceTime, says Jane Assay, author of several books about family relationships. Lesson 2, the adage, age is just a number, has new meaning. Your health is directly related to lifestyle, nutrition, physical activity, a healthy weight, and restorative sleep. Jacob Mirsky, MD, primary care physician at the Massachusetts General Hospital Revere Healthcare Center. If you're healthy, how much does older age matter for risk of death from COVID-19? A study of 470,034 women and men revealed some intriguing answers. Risk of a fatal infection was 4 times higher for healthy people 75 and older than for all participants younger than 65. But add in people with chronic health conditions like high blood pressure, obesity, or lung problems, and the risk for people 75 plus jumped 13-fold. Another finding, a healthy 75-year-old was 1/3 as likely to die from the coronavirus as a 65-year-old with multiple chronic health issues. The bottom line, age affects your risk of severe illness with COVID, but you should be far more focused on avoiding chronic health conditions by making smart lifestyle choices. Coronavirus highlighted yet another reason it's so important to attend to health factors like poor diet and lack of exercise, Mirsky says. Lifestyle changes can improve your overall health, which will likely directly reduce your risk of developing severe COVID or dying of COVID. And that's true no matter what age you are. Lesson 3. We befriended technology, and there's no going back. Folks who have tried online banking will stay with it. It won't mean they won't go back to branches, but they might go back for a different purpose. That's Theodora Lau, founder of financial technology consulting firm Unconventional Ventures. The world has long been going digital, but before the pandemic, older Americans still tended to buy apples at the grocery store, have the doctor measure blood pressure, and see new movies at the theater. We still may cling to a few IRL in real life experiences, but virtual tools are increasingly the new default. If nothing else, COVID has shown us how resilient and adaptable humans are as a society when forced to change, says Joseph Wang, CEO of StartX, an organization that helps tech companies get off the ground. Popular food delivery apps more than doubled their earnings last year. Weddings and memorial services were held over video conferences. Yes, we'll go back to in-person ones, but probably with cameras and live feeds now to include remote participants. In the financial sector, PayPal reported that its fastest-growing user group was people over 50. Chase said that about half of its new online users were 50-plus. In telehealth, more doctors conducted routine exams via webcam than ever before. And in response, insurance coverage expanded for these remote appointments. It quickly became the only way to operate at scale in today's world, Wang says, both for us as patients and the doctors and nurses who treat us. Telemedicine will turn out to be a better and more effective experience in many cases, even after COVID ends. Lesson 4. Pampering is healthy. Not only does self-care have positive outcomes for you, but it also sets an example to younger generations as something to establish and maintain for your entire life. That's Rochelle Concepcion, clinical psychologist and president of the Asian American Psychological Association. As the virus upended life last spring, America became hibernation nation. Soup, chocolate, and athleisure sales exploded. With 7 in 10 American workers doing their jobs from home, COVID turned the focus for all ages to simple pleasures that soothe. Pampering is vital to your well-being, and that self-care mindset is likely to endure. Whether it is taking long bubble baths, tinkering in the workshop, enjoying herbal tea, trying to write a song, rewatching a favorite old movie, or seeing noon come while you're still in your robe, being good to yourself offers a necessary reprieve from whatever horrors threaten us from out there, says Isabel Gillies, author of Cozy, The Art of Arranging Yourself in the World. Lesson 5. Work is anywhere now, a shift that bodes well for older Americans. One major impact of the working from home focus is that more jobs are becoming non-location specific. Carol Fishman Cohen, co-founder of iRelaunch, which works with employers to create mid-career return-to-work programs for older workers. Forced to work remotely, millions of workers and their managers found they could be just as productive as they were at the office, thanks to high-speed internet and other technologies. This has opened a lot of corporate eyes, says Stephen Allen, professor of economics at North Carolina State University, Twitter, retailer REI, and insurer Lincoln Financial Group, among other employers, have announced plans to increase remote work permanently. Yes, many of us are tied to a location. Nurses, police officers, roofers, chefs, and countless others will always need to show up. But if you are among the people now able to work remotely, you might be able to live in a less costly area than where your employer is based, or move right away to the community you were planning to retire to. As remote hiring takes hold, your on-screen persona becomes more of a factor. This puts more pressure on you to make sure you show up well in a virtual setting, Cohen notes. A pandemic downside. Nearly two-thirds of self-employed workers report being hurt financially, according to MBO Partners. But remote work could fuel their comeback. Now that companies are used to workers not being as strongly attached physically to a workplace, they'll be more amenable to hiring independent workers, says Steve King, partner at Emergent Research. Meanwhile, ageism remains a threat, as evidenced by the hard hit that older workers took last year. In December, 45.5% of unemployed workers 55 and older had been out of work for 27 weeks or more, compared with 35.1% of younger job seekers. Some employers, it's been reported, are replacing laid-off older workers with younger, lower-paid ones. Psychological studies, says Allen, indicate that older workers have good communication and interpersonal skills, both critical for remote work. But whether those strengths can offset age discrimination in the workplace is unknown. Lesson 6. Have a stash ready for the next crisis. The need to augment our retirement savings system to help people put away emergency savings is crucial. J. Mark Irwe, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and former senior advisor to the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury. Before the pandemic, nearly 4 in 10 households did not have the cash on hand to cover an unexpected $400 expense, according to a Federal Reserve report. Then the economic downturn hit. By last October, over half of all workers in America were reporting reduced hours, lower pay, a layoff, or other hits to their employment situation. A third had taken a loan or early withdrawal from a retirement plan or intended to. Alarm bells were already ringing, but many workers were caught off guard without emergency savings, says Catherine Collinson, CEO and president of the Transamerica Institute. The pandemic has laid bare so many weaknesses in our safety net. How to get Americans to save more? One solution could be a workplace innovation that's just beginning to catch on, an employee-sponsored rainy day savings account funded with payroll deductions. By creating a dedicated pot of savings, the thinking goes, workers are less likely to tap retirement accounts in an emergency. It's much better from a behavioral standpoint to separate short-term savings from long-term savings, Irwe says. AARP has been working to make those accounts easier to create and use and is already offering them to its own employees. Funding the account with automatic payroll deductions is a key to success. Sometimes you think you don't have the money to save, but if a little is put away for you each pay period, you don't feel the pinch, Irwe says. Lesson 7. We will gather again, but very carefully. Mask and sanitizers will be part of the norm for years, the way airport and transportation security measures are still in place from 9/11. Christopher McKnight Nichols, associate professor of history at Oregon State University and founder of the Citizenship and Crisis Initiative. The COVID-19 pandemic won't end with bells tolling or a ticker tape parade. Instead, we'll slowly, cautiously ease back to familiar activities. For all our fears of the coronavirus, many of us can't wait to resume a public life. When 1,000 people 65 and older were asked which pursuits they were most eager to resume after the pandemic, 78% said going out to dinner. 76% picked getting together with family and friends. 71% chose travel, and 30% replied going to the movies. Seeing art, attending concerts, cheering in a stadium, even going to class reunions we might have once dreaded, we'll do them again. But how will we return to feeling comfortable in groups of tens, hundreds, and thousands? And will these gatherings be different? Don't expect the same old, same old. Just as the rationing, isolation, and economic crisis caused by World War I and the Spanish flu epidemic led to a kind of awakening of how we assembled, Nichols says, expect COVID-19 to shake up the nature and personality of our public spaces. Back in the 1920s, it was the rise of jazz clubs, organized athletics, and fraternal organizations, and the golden age of the cinema. As the pandemic subsides, we'll probably see more temperature-controlled outdoor events and dining spaces, more pedestrian and bicycling options, more city parks, and more hybrid events that give participants the option to attend virtually. As event organizers adjust, so must attendees. Psychologists say the techniques of cognitive behavioral therapy can help people at any age regain the certainty and confidence they need to venture into the public space post-pandemic. Visualizing good outcomes and repeating a stated goal can help overcome whatever obstacles are holding you back, says Gabrielle Ottingen, a professor of psychology at New York University, who suggests making an if-then plan to reacclimate to public life. If eating indoors at a restaurant is too agitating, then try a table outside first. If a bucket list family vacation to Italy feels too daunting, then book a stateside trip together first. There's always an alternative if something stands in the way of you fulfilling your wish, she says. Eventually, you'll get there. Lesson 8. Our trust in one another has frayed, but it can be slowly restored. Truth matters, but it requires messaging and patience, historian John M. Barry, author of The Great Influenza. Even before our views perforated along lines dotted by pandemic politics, race, and class, we were losing faith in society. In 1997, 64% of Americans put a very great or good deal of trust in the political competence of their fellow citizens. Today, only a third of us feel that way. A 2019 Pew survey found that the majority of Americans say most people can't be trusted. Only 13% of millennials say America is the greatest country, compared with 45% of members of the silent generation. To trust again? As life returns, look beyond your familiar pod. Distrust breeds distrust. But hope isn't lost for finding common ground, especially for older people, says Encore.org's Friedman. Rebuilding trust means creating greater opportunities to encounter people who are different from us and to come together across generations. He points to pandemic efforts like Good Neighbors from the home sharing platform Nesterly, which pairs old and young to provide cross-generational support, and UCLA's Generation Exchange, which connects Gen X mentors with children in grades K through 3 in South Los Angeles, where educational achievement is notoriously poor. Engaging with people for a common goal makes you trust them, says Friedman. Verify facts, then decide. Check reliable, balanced news sources such as Reuters and the Associated Press and unbiased fact-checking sites such as PolitiFact before clamping down on an opinion. As important, be open to changing viewpoints, yours and others, as conditions change. The 1918 flu pandemic is instructive. Trust in the government withered, then returned. As we see vaccines slowly gain widespread success in fighting this virus, I think we'll start to overcome some of our siloed ways of thinking and find relief, together as one, that this public health menace is ending, says historian Barry. Lesson 9. Loneliness hurts health more than we thought. Isolation doesn't just happen to older adults, it happens to us all. Julian Holt Lunstead, professor of psychology and neuroscience at Brigham Young University. How deadly is the condition of loneliness? During the first 5 months of the pandemic, nursing home lockdowns intended to safeguard older and vulnerable adults with dementia contributed to the deaths of an additional 13,200 people compared with previous years, according to a shocking Washington Post investigation. People with dementia are dying, the article notes, not just from the virus, but from the very strategy of isolation that's supposed to protect them. Rates of psychological distress rose for all adults as the pandemic deepened, increasing sixfold for young adults and quadrupling for those ages 30 to 54, according to a Johns Hopkins University survey. And it's hard to tell whether the workplace culture many of us relied on for social support will fully return anytime soon. Those 50-plus have a leg up. Older adults with higher levels of empathy, compassion, decisiveness, and self-reflection score lowest for loneliness, says Dilip Jesty, MD, director of the Sam and Rose Stein Institute for Research on Aging at the University of California, San Diego. Many older adults have handled COVID-19 psychologically better than younger adults. With age comes experience and wisdom. You've lived through difficult times before and survived. Jesty suggests that older adults are in the position to help themselves by helping others manage loneliness as mentors and advisors. Lesson 10. When your world gets small, nature lets you live large. For older people in particular, nature provided a way to shake off the weight and hardships associated with stay-at-home orders, of social isolation, and of the stress of being the most vulnerable population in the pandemic. Kathleen Wolfe, a research social scientist in the School of Environmental and Forest Sciences at the University of Washington. One silver lining to COVID-19's dark cloud. Clouds themselves become more familiar to all of us. So did birds, trees, shooting stars, and window gardens. Nearly 6 in 10 Americans have a new appreciation for nature, according to one survey that also found 3/4 of respondents reported a boost in their mood while spending time outside. Here's how to pay our new outlook life forward. Move somewhere greener, or at least move around more outside. Nearly 1/3 of Americans were considering moving to less populated areas, according to a Harris poll taken last year during the pandemic. Walking, running, and hiking became national pastimes. One day last September, Boston's Blue Bikes bike share system saw its highest ever single-day ridership, with 14,000 trips recorded. Stargazers and birdwatchers helped push binocular sales up 22%. The return of the pandemic Victory Garden reflects research that finds 79% of patients feel more relaxed and calm after spending time in a garden. Make the city less gritty. The University of Washington's Wolf thinks our collective nature kick will go beyond a run on backyard petunias. Her research brief on the benefits of nearby nature in cities for older adults suggests we may rethink the design of neighborhood environments to facilitate older people's outdoor activities. That means more places to sit, more green space associated with the health status of older people, safer routes and paths, and more allotment for community gardens. It's impossible to overestimate the value these outdoor spaces have on reducing stressful life events, improving working memory, and adding meaning and happiness in older people's lives, Wolf says. If you can't get out, bring nature in. Even video and sounds of nature can provide health gains to those shut indoors, says Mark Berman of the University of Chicago's Environmental Neuroscience Lab. Listening to recordings of crickets chirping or waves crashing improved how our subjects performed on cognitive tests, he says. Lesson 11. We have unleashed a revolution in medicine. One of the lessons we've learned from COVID is that the scientific community working together can do amazing things. John Cook, MD, medical director of the RNA Therapeutics Program at Houston Methodist Hospital's DeBakey Heart and Vascular Center. It usually takes 4 to 20 years to create vaccines. For the new messenger RNA, mRNA vaccines from Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna, it took just a record 11 months. The process may have changed forever the way drugs are developed. Breakthroughs don't just happen in eureka moments. Supporting the development of the COVID-19 vaccines was more than a decade of research into mRNA vaccines, which teach human cells how to make a protein that triggers a specific immune response. The research had already overcome many hurdles, such as making sure that mRNA wouldn't provoke inflammation, says Lynn McQuatt, director of the University of Rochester's Center for RNA Biology. Thanks to the recent breakthroughs, I expect to see the approval of more mRNA-based vaccines in the next several years, says mRNA researcher Norbert Pardee, a research assistant professor of medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Future mRNA therapies could regenerate muscle in failing hearts and target the unique genetics of individual cancers with personalized cancer vaccines. Doctors will be able to sequence your tumor and use it to make a vaccine that awakens your immune system to fight it, McQuatt says. And lesson 12. For some, hard times bring opportunity. When the going got tough, many people got going with a business plan. In the second half of 2020, applications to form businesses likely to hire employees rose 40% over the corresponding figure for the prior year, the Census Bureau reports. The Great Recession had no such spike, notes Alexander Bartik, assistant professor of economics at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. That's cause for some optimism that there are people who are trying to start new things, he says. One possible reason this time was different, stocks and home values often used to fund small business startups hadn't weakened. And the final article from the AARP Bulletin is Walmart Do's and Don'ts, Tips for Landing Better Deals. Drawing in customers with its rock-bottom prices, Walmart now generates one out of every 10 retail transactions in the U.S., according to Payments.com, and 90% of Americans shop at its website or at one of its more than 4,700 stores every year, the company says. Price comparisons with other retailers confirm that buying at Walmart and Walmart.com will save you money, but you can do even better. Following up on last issue's tricks for shopping at Amazon, here are Walmart secrets that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. Do join Walmart Plus if you regularly shop online for groceries. The store's new membership program, which costs $12.95 a month or $98 a year, gets you unlimited free shipping on deliveries of groceries and other everyday items totaling $35 or more. Those delivery charges would otherwise be $7.95 to $9.95 a pop. So if you shop at least twice a month, Walmart Plus will pay for itself. Do consider Walmart's credit card. The Capital One Walmart Rewards MasterCard gives you 5% back on purchases at Walmart.com and 2% back at Walmart stores. You'll get 5% on in-store purchases for the first 12 months if you pay via the company's smartphone app. But skip this no annual fee card if you can't pay your bill in full each month, since interest charges ranging up to 27% can eat up rewards and a lot more. Don't pay for shipping. Walmart.com offers free next-day delivery on thousands of non-grocery items with a minimum order of $35. No Walmart Plus membership required. Do take your prescriptions to the store. Walmart's pharmacy offers generic drugs starting at $4 a month. Don't forget to check for a lower price online. The retailer's price match policy states that if you make a purchase on Walmart.com and then find a lower price at a competitor's website, Walmart will match it. Do install apps to boost your savings. Check out 51, Ibotta, Coupons.com, and other cashback apps are easy to use and can be paired with cashback credit card programs such as Walmart's. Look for Walmart-specific offers on the apps and submit a picture of your receipt after you buy. Some apps will even link directly to your loyalty card, so you don't have to submit receipts, points out Joni Diemer, co-founder of the CrazyCouponLady.com. Each app has a different cash-out policy. You have been listening to Senior Living on Al Radio. You can listen to Al Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.alradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 this evening. I'm Chrissy Mernon saying goodbye from Al Radio.